Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Upgrade your kitchen today with Clearview Cabinetry. We offer a great selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and with cabinet accessories to match your unique style. View our selection of Clearview Cabinetry on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I woke up here in Mexico City, turned on the TV. You know, I'd been out in the bush on the trail of El Chapo. So I got back to Mexico City, the sprawling capital of this now totally dysfunctional country, to the first pictures of the Chattanooga Marine massacre scene. And all I thought about as I was lying in bed at the hotel here is how bitterly ironic and outrageous it is that you have these four hero Marines, including one who earned the Purple Heart, who survived combat in Iraq, including the bloody Battle of Fallujah, only to be slaughtered here at home. And by whom? A 24-year-old Kuwaiti-born, totally Americanized engineer who drank the ISIS Kool-Aid. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you, he's one of the tiny minority of disgruntled Sunni Muslim kids motivated by internet ISIS BS to carve their way into heaven with the blood of us infidels. There are more just like him, Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz, to come. He's the enemy of civilization, and his atrocities are just begun. There are probably 500,000 millennial age Sunni Muslim kids in the United States. Maybe 15-20% of that number in the New York area. Let's say three of them, or five of them, or 10 of the 500,000. You know, have these 20-somethings searching for their identity and all the rest of it on the internet 24/7. Say there's three or five or 10 of them who gets to the ISIS website. I bet it's being visited by thousands. Let's just say three or five or 10 of them get indoctrinated or get motivated like this Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz did to become a true believer, to become someone who sees in all of the propaganda, the affliction of the Muslim people, the oppression of the Sunnis by the Shiites and by the other infidels, the Christians and the Jews and so forth. And they are given instructions on what to do, how to act out to earn their life after death. Get a gun, shoot somebody in uniform, get a hatchet, kill a cop. This is the future of the world. This is the future of New York. It's not going to be, not in this era, I say. It's not going to be a massive ISIS attack, a coordinated military effort. It's going to be a kid with a gun and a beef. Or who knows how to make a pressure cooker bomb and a beef. That's what it's going to be. How do you stop that? How do you stop the lone wolf, Sunni Muslim extremist kid who wants to blow himself to smithereens as he takes as many non-believers as he can with him? How do you do that? They tell us, if you see something, say something, which is also BS. We're not going to see anything. You're not going to see a pressure cooker in the middle of Times Square. You know who can see something and say something? It's the people, with all due respect. And I have more Sunni Muslim friends than almost any non-Sunni Muslim I know. And I have these friends from high-functioning business types, to journalists, to people who own their own businesses, to wealthy people, middle-class people, people who are drivers. So the whole spectrum. These are good people, and the ones in the United States are totally Americanized good citizens, except for the three of them, or the five of them, or the ten of them, or their sons, who drink the Kool-Aid and want to act out. How do you protect? You know, that's why you need see something, say something among that population. All the Sunni Muslim people I've just described, those good people, they go to the mosque to say their prayers and Ramadan ending. They know who the other parishioners are. They know who the other worshipers are. They can see when a 24-year-old kid is not the same kid he was when he was 23 or 22. He's become suddenly more radicalized, more angry at the United States, at the West. He gets the buzz cut. He grows the beard out. He stops talking to some of his pals. Those are the folks who have to, if they see something, say something. We have to be real about this now. We have to abandon the caution that President Obama and others are showing with their political correctness and their desire not to inflame the general population against the minority. I get that. But we have to also understand who the enemy is. And a lot of these are Christian converts, or I don't know, even Jewish converts. I remember we had that spokesman of the Taliban was a Jewish kid from L.A. You can see them if you're in that mosque, you're in the circle of believers. You know who's next to you, who's kneeling next to you. You know you have seen an evolution, a personal. You must tell somebody. You have to be the first line of defense for the nation and the way of life that you are either born to or have come and are naturalized to. You have a responsibility to the rest of us because you are closer. You have your ears to the ground. Your eyes are around. You have to be the people who see something and say something. Because otherwise, and let's be frank about this, there is no way that we can stop these attacks except intercepting the kid before he leaves home with the weapon, or sharp police work and luck on the scene, like when they took the axe to the NYPD cops, and the guy went after the female cop and finally was taken down by the partner. I mean, that's way too late, but I mean, that's what we will be forced to do. This is the new war that America is engaged in. This is the real vulnerability. It won't be over in Iraq anymore or in Afghanistan anymore. There, our professional military will do whatever the president and the Congress of the United States and the people of the United States want them to do. They'll try to keep the enemy abroad. They'll continue to disrupt ISIS, to degrade ISIS, hopefully to destroy ISIS. That's one fight. But that's not the existential threat to our way of life. The existential threat to our way of life is Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz. And we have to call it what it is. This is a Sunni Muslim extremist wannabe. Motivated by the internet, I'll bet you every penny I have in the bank. This is what the investigation will show. I Facebooked or tweeted out as soon as I heard about this last night. I said, I know what this was, even before the name of the perp was released. I knew what this was. This was a Sunni Muslim extremist attack on a U.S. military facility. So I want to talk about that today. Actually, let me get reaction. All right, let me take this first call. Noam, who's our first caller?
You got Jeff. Jeff is in Freehold, New Jersey.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Hi, Geraldo. I barely agree with you, but you hit it right on the spot. I mean, the same thing happened in Eastern Europe and Germany during World War II. Good people let things get out of hand, and it's scary. But those Marines were left holding themselves because they had no way to protect themselves. All our military are targets, just like in Fort Hood, and they can't protect themselves now because they were disarmed. At least give them a fighting chance.
Now, Jeffrey, I got it, Jeff. An excellent point he makes, and this is where I would like our discussion to go this morning. There is a no-gun policy in many federal facilities, including Fort Hood, gun-free zones, and all of these recruiting centers dating back to 1993. Why? Why did President Clinton and George H.W. Bush, he actually initiated some of these gun-free policies at the end of his administration in the late 80s, early 90s, before Clinton in 1993 made it a blanket kind of policy, gun-free zone. Should we have gun-free zones? That's the question number one. 866 Geraldo, Noam will field the calls because I'm here in Mexico City. But here, let me give you my position, and then you can bounce off that. These gun-free zones were created in part, remember we had a much different atmosphere then about gun control. We had the Brady ban on automatic weapons. We had a lot of bans on imported automatics and other semi-automatics. They'd be converted to a full automatic. So we had a much different, in the wake of President Reagan's assassination attempt, we had a much different attitude about guns, and I wish we could go back to that. But one of the reasons they have gun-free zones in the military facilities is, you know, we are losing 22 military veterans every single day to suicide. One active duty service member kills himself every single day. That's why they have the gun-free zones, the fear of workplace violence, the fear of post-traumatic stress. I believe that the gun-free zones should remain. But as I said about Sandy Hook and the slaughter up there in the grade school, where so many youngsters lost their lives and there were no armed good guys on site, I think there should be one designated shooter or armed guard, let me say, at every one of these facilities that are licensed professional. Like I'm here in Mexico City. Last night, or the night before last, there were two or three TV crews that got bounced by local motorcycle bandidos, and these TV crews did not have armed guards with them. If those motorcycle bandidos had tried to mess with me, they would have been in a gunfight. I have nothing against guns, but I believe that in public schools, in these other facilities, in the military recruiting centers, you want one gun. One gun is enough. That's what I believe. Otherwise, I believe the gun-free zone should remain. I'll take a break. Noam and I haven't even had a chance to say hello to my partner, will talk about this. How are you doing, by the way?
I'm doing just great. I want to hear about, I saw your big excitement on Fox News last night in El Chapo's tunnel. That was kind of cool.
Pretty cool. Geraldo gets in the tunnel. Yeah. I'll talk about that too. Welcome back to the program. Geraldo reporting from Mexico City. Noam Layden in our studio high above Madison Square Garden in New York. Mike is in Queens, I think it is. Mike, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hey, Geraldo, how are you?
All right. Yeah, great. All wish right. I was home, but I'm great.
So the first priority in a deployment is force security. When traveling, armed services are directed not to wear their uniforms on commercial aircraft, on public transportation.
Really? Really?
That's correct.
How sad. How sad. Particularly when they say that uniformed military personnel can do things like board early and get other perks that they have earned by their service to our country, and now you're saying that they don't wear their uniforms anymore for fear of their own personal safety?
Well, that's mandated. It's an order. So you do a lot of flying. Look around the airport. Everybody's carrying a duffel bag, but they're in civilian attire.
You're so right. I was wondering, you know, I never put two and two together. I'm such a dummy, but I appreciate that. You're absolutely right. That's amazing. How sad that is, Noam, that our heroes can't be recognized. You know how until, you know, 6 months ago, you saw people in uniform routinely, and you see them, you almost want to give them an ovation when they come into the airport. You want to say, slap them on the back, attaboy, or thank you, ma'am, whatever it is. And now they're
don't wear their uniforms for fear of this kind of personalized terrorism.
Isn't
because
that,
that's what it is.
It feels like almost like we're retreating when I hear that. Like, so we're going to do that? I mean, I understand it's for the safety of the soldiers, but it's almost like we're afraid. So now we're going backwards. We're sort of giving in to them.
What's the option?
I don't know.
I mean, that's the problem. Maybe you could give the GI the personal option. You can wear your uniform, just understand that there is a security risk and that you accept the risk. You know, I guess you could do something like that. If I were the president, maybe I would issue an order that said, listen, you can wear the uniform. We would prefer you don't because of the security risk, but it's not an order not to. In other words, leave it up to them. You know, here's the problem. I was thinking about this, you know, when I first heard about the attack by this kid on the recruiting center in Chattanooga. I remember there was an attack on a recruiting center in New York City. Didn't we have the kid on a bicycle?
They've never solved that one. Yeah, he
never
threw a crude bomb at the recruiting center in Times Square.
Exactly. And I remember during the Black Panther era also. So we're back to that. That is the reality right now. And I'm telling you, it's not an existential threat until they get their hands on a hand-carried nuclear weapon. I mean, they can kill people. They've demonstrated the London subway, 9/11. They can kill globs of people. But, you know, the worst thing is that they will erode our feeling that civilization will protect us, with the exception of the aberrant criminal, robber, or whatever it is. And if they can cause sufficient disquiet, they are, in a way, winning that battle, at least for the hearts and minds of Americans. They can, you know, twist us so that every Muslim we see, every kid with a beard becomes Bin Laden. And that's really too bad. And that is there. We have to fight against that. But at the same time, we have to recognize the reality. We can't say, I'm telling you, Ray Kelly and what the NYPD did with the surveillance and so forth. And I understand how many people were annoyed by it. But, you know, that's just life. That's just life. I mean, Noam, you and I disagree about stop and frisk because you don't think that, the kid in the inner city should bear the burden of the fight against crime by having personal indignities inflicted by cops who searched them for very little reason. I get that we disagree about that. I just want to save lives. And, of course, there's a point in the middle where we can meet and agree. But don't you agree that Sunni Muslims now bear a special burden, unfortunately, tragically, to be their own police, to warn the rest of us about the kid going wrong?
You know, I don't think we would have caught on to this 24-year-old. You say he's very involved in social media. I haven't seen that anywhere. And so if he's a lone wolf, he's a lone wolf. How do you catch a lone wolf? He's not communicating with anybody.
You can't. You can't catch a lone wolf, but most lone wolves post blogs, they tweet, they use Facebook, and they do stuff that act out that others can recognize.
36 minutes after 10 o'clock here on 77 WABC. I'm Geraldo in Mexico City. Noam Layden is in New York. Noam, you're seeing this Fox News poll. Donald Trump on top of the heap when it comes to the GOP nominees. He's polling 18%. Scott Walker now is in second place. Jeb Bush has faded out. I'm telling you, Trump is changing the game. Now nobody is laughing at his candidacy. And one of the things he has used to great effect, much to my dismay, is campaigning against the undocumented immigrants coming into the country. First, it was the San Francisco murder of that poor Katie Steinle, shot in the back, the 32-year-old, totally innocent, wonderful victim of a dirtbag, ex-con, multiple reentry, undocumented illegal immigrant. Who shot her for no apparent reason in the back. I mean, Trump took that story and used it to great effect to drum up support for his anti-immigration campaign. He also used the escape of El Chapo. El Chapo, the notorious, ruthless crime kingpin who had escaped before and now was the kingpin behind history's greatest prison break, because that's what it was. And that's what I've been reporting on here for Fox News. The billionaire drug lord El Chapo breaking out of the most secure prison in the country. And the entire country, the entire power structure of this troubled nation has been rattled, ladies and gentlemen. Mexico is humiliated. Mexico is destabilized by questions about how El Chapo managed this extraordinary breakout from prison. It required intense effort over at least a year, obvious engineering expertise. I'm telling you, the thing about Mexico and the government is there's a stink of corruption here. I mean, after initially saying that they would allow enhanced American help in recapturing El Chapo, who was caught in the first place by U.S. intelligence, we're now offering assets like drones and extra federal marshals, but now Mexico is being reluctant. They're saying, no, we don't need any extra help. We've got tens of thousands of our people on the job. They can find this guy. Baloney. So you got this billionaire drug lord who's facing potential death penalty charges in six U.S. federal courts, California, Arizona, Texas, Florida, Illinois, and in New York, in the Southern District, downtown New York City. He's facing potential death penalty charges on crimes, alleged crimes ranging from murder, multiple murder, to drug trafficking, to money laundering. And I think the United States wants him a lot more than Mexico does. Why doesn't Mexico want him? Because maybe, and I interviewed an opposition senator who told me literally that there were people high up the food chain here in Mexico who were complicit, who were co-conspirators in this great escape. I went in the tunnel. You have to see this tunnel. You have to see this feat of engineering to understand what happened here. This guy should be hired to finish the Second Avenue subway. His gangster colleagues purchased a property on a hill a mile away from the prison. They built a house with a big sprawling yard that they enclosed with a big concrete wall. And then they started digging in that house. And they dug bucket by bucket, wheelbarrow by wheelbarrow. First, they created a ventilation shaft, then a larger shaft. Then they placed a gigantic generator on an intermediary level, maybe 10 foot down. I mean, I went in this thing yesterday. There's this huge generator providing electric lighting, ventilation, air conditioning. Then they dug from the intermediate level down three stories. You walk down a ladder three stories down, and there the main tunnel begins. It is, I would say, at least 6 foot wide by maybe 5 feet high. There's a rail laid in the middle of it. On that rail are two little rail cars and a third powered by that motorcycle that you have undoubtedly seen. The motorcycle was used as the guys would dig in their ventilated tunnel. As they filled their buckets and filled the barrels and then sent the barrels back and the buckets back to the shaft, they had a power winch there to take up bucket by bucket. And then they excavated. A cubic yard of dirt weighs 3,000 pounds. Every yard by yard, 3,000 pounds of dirt. So they fill the buckets, and the rail keeps getting laid, and the tunnel gets longer and longer. It's a mile from the prison. Not only do they dig this thing three stories deep in the earth, underneath a railroad track, for goodness sake, through a field,
past other homes, under the wall of the Altiplano Supermax prison. Then they dig up. Not only did they dig up, it's not like they had a generalized target when they're digging up. They dug up right into El Chapo's prison cell. And not only did they dig into the prison cell, they dug precisely in the one area, 2 foot by 2 foot, in his toilet, where they provide a little half wall for privacy when the guy is squatting on the bowl or standing in the shower. The one part of his cell that the surveillance video camera could not see. They came up right in that tiny area. This required an investment of millions of dollars. This required the intensive effort. They estimate it would have taken 4 guys working 10 hours, 7 days a week, a full year to complete this dig. And they dug it in a way that was so precise that they came up right in his shower, right in that one tiny area. This makes the Dannemora prison escape look like a Little League effort. It was extraordinary to see, and it was breathtaking in the effectiveness and the beauty of it, and how it could have happened with nobody in authority recognizing 2,000 tons of dirt. How do you get rid of 2,000 tons of dirt and nobody notices what you're doing? What are you doing? You think you're planting rice? You're planting corn? 2,000 tons of dirt are being removed? How do you get the rails, a mile-long rail, double rail, obviously, the gigantic generator, people coming and going and coming and going? And now they're saying he had 20 minutes. He comes down, El Chapo comes down after he put his canary there to make sure the canary could live. The canary died. I don't know why the canary died. Eventually they found the canary in his cell. So El Chapo goes, you've seen the video. He goes into the toilet, slips down the vertical shaft, hops on the motorcycle, runs it a mile, goes to the other shaft, up the shaft, and then he escapes. And they say he had 19 minutes before the authorities were alerted. El Chapo, a billionaire. You think he's like those dummies in upstate New York? He stays around? Bull. You know where I think he is? You know where I think he is? He's in Sinaloa. He's back home in the beautiful Pacific mountainous caves. He's an expert in tunnel digging. That's the other thing. They put El Chapo, the tunnel master, who invented the drug smuggling tunnels under the southern border, they put him in a supermax prison surrounded by dirt, and they don't think about the danger from someone tunneling under. They got 20-inch thick walls and a 1-inch thick floor. And nobody knew it. His escape, Noam Layden, has destabilized this whole country because everyone thinks that this whole saga has the stink of malignant corruption that has affected this entire nation.
When you spell it out like that, you think there wasn't anybody in that prison who wasn't in on it. To have that kind of construction being done, that kind of noise being made, that kind of dirt being pushed around, everybody in that prison sounds like they were on the take except for the prisoners.
They have, it's funny that you say that. They fired the top 3 guards. They fired them. Oh, okay. They're out of a job. Now you have the 30 or so prison guards and other prison personnel who've been held incommunicado. I haven't checked this morning. I mean, maybe they finally let their lawyers or their family see them. But up until last night, they were held incommunicado in violation of Mexican law. They have 72 hours to be charged. Otherwise, they have to be let free under Mexican law. It was when last I checked, it was like 100 hours had gone by and no one had talked to them except I'm sure they're being waterboarded or messed around with inside the prison in a desperate quest to find out who was responsible of those prison officials, if any. But I think the higher ups are much more culpable. I think that when you have $1 billion, you spread that money around. And let's say there were some of these prison guards were in on it. How can they not be? When you're up against El Chapo, He's got $1 billion. That means he could give you a bribe of $100,000. That's like the interest he makes in 6 hours. So he gives you a bribe of $100,000. You're making $200 a week. That's a hard temptation to turn down. And the other side of it is, if you do turn it down, he'll kill your wife. He'll cut up the ears of your child if you turn him down to take the bribe. So that's the difficult position the Mexican people are in right now. They've got these drug lords with hundreds of thousands and millions and billions of dollars. El Chapo, they say, what, the 1,000th richest man on earth, one of the most powerful people in the Western Hemisphere. I'm telling you, this has destabilized the whole country, and it will affect the presidential election because Trump will keep riding it. And El Chapo has threatened Trump, by the way. And I would take that threat seriously. Because if a Muslim extremist can be motivated by religion and a suicide bomb, as his route to Valhalla, don't you think El Chapo could buy a suicide bomber who's going to know his family's going to be taken care of forever to do something, a suicide assassin to do something against one of our high-ranking officials or candidates? This is a big deal, and it has affected this entire nation. And it's been extraordinary working on the story. I'll be right back.
I'd just like to give you a heads up. Watch, if you can, Fox News Channel tonight. My pal Sean Hannity is doing an hour-long special on the escape of El Chapo, the notorious, the ruthless crime kingpin, this drug lord, this billionaire drug lord, El Chapo. He'll feature the work I did here on the scene, particularly in that extraordinary tunnel. And I'm telling you, no, seeing is believing. It's one of those things. You just wonder. The other thing I'm really bugged about, Mexico's pride now. Now they're very, very, I'm telling you, the attitude here goes between humiliation and outrage. You talk to the people, you read the Mexican newspapers, they are so humiliated by this. They are so outraged by this that this has affected and infected the entire administration of the current president, Peña Nieto, a guy who came into office saying he was going to clean up Mexico. And then with our help, really, we led the way in 2014, got the capture of El Capo. That was his biggest achievement. And now to lose his number one most wanted man from maximum security prison when he, the president, was off in Paris on something having to do with global climate change. I mean, I can't begin to explain how this whole nation is destabilized by this.
You know, El Chapo, they get him back behind bars, but almost from the day he's in there, they're building this tunnel, right? I mean, imagine it.
It took over a year to do. He only did 16 months.
Right. So
he did 16 months. So they started, it was as soon as they came and they cased the joint, they had to survey it. They had to employ engineers. They had to bring in heavy equipment. They had to, had to get the trucks. They had to have the trucks. There was a major infrastructure project going on nearby conceivably that could have covered some of the dirt removal because there were a lot of construction trucks coming and going.
Yeah, but you know how contractors are.
This was far removed from that. Yeah, this
contractors usually double the time and double the money. But these guys work much faster.
Oh, yeah. They were. This guy was. It is something to see. And that Mexico is not. Let's say he's back in Sinaloa. The only way you're going to get him is with drones. The people of Sinaloa aren't going to stitch him out. No, mate. I'm just getting a call. Craig is telling me that I've got to go back. There's something I've got to do a follow-up.
All right.
So do me a favor. You take over.
Now?
I'll call. Yeah, you take over now. Take some calls, both on the El Chapo and on the other issue of guns. And the gun-free zones. Would you do that?
I will do that. Don't drink the water, all right?
I'll see you Monday.
So the names are coming in of these Marines who were murdered and had no chance. I mean, they had no chance at all, these two Marines. Well, there's four of them all together, but we know the names of two. 40-year-old Sergeant Thomas Sullivan from Massachusetts had a career in the military, got a Purple Heart, was in Fallujah, served in Afghanistan. I mean, this guy was a real hero, 40 years old, And he was on the other end of this gun from this the scumbag. I almost don't even want to give him a name. From the scumbag who now we find out, the sleazeball who fired at these four in Chattanooga. He had an AK-47. So he had an AK-47, but these Marines who are trained to defend us had nothing to fight back with. Zippo. They had no gun to fight back with. And it was because of this gun-free policy inside these military bases across the country. So how's that possible? I mean, I understand that why it was done that way, but we had these domestic disputes that were happening on these military installations, and people were being killed because they had the guns. And then, of course, you had the suicide rate, which is just obscene and heartbreaking at the same time. But there has to be some sort of middle ground. How do you have these military folks without guns to defend themselves? Before we get into that, we're going to take your phone calls, by the way. 1-866-437-2536. That's 1-866-HERALDO. Let's get the latest from Chattanooga. On the phone from CNN is Karen Kaifa. She joins us live. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Noam.
Give us the latest. What's going on in Chattanooga this morning?
Yeah, there's a lot of activity happening. I've been standing outside the recruiting center in the strip mall where all of this started to transpire about 24 hours ago. And there's a lot of mixed activity. First of all, you have an FBI team that is obviously collecting evidence and continuing this investigation as it enters its first full day. But you also have a makeshift memorial that has cropped up with balloons and flags and people who want to pay tribute to these four Marines who lost their lives here yesterday. So there's a lot of emotion, but there's also the hard evidence of the investigation that is being led, of course, by the FBI, federal and local authorities, working together. They will be working together throughout the day. We're expected to get the latest update from them sometime this afternoon. But it was said this morning that there was a focus on electronics related to the gunmen to see if they could comb through there and see if there was any evidence that could give them any indication as to what his motive was, Noam.
Yeah, so 24-year-old Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz, his father apparently was on the terror watch list for a while. What was that all about?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot that's been going on, a lot of information that has come out since we learned the suspect's name yesterday afternoon, the gunman's name yesterday afternoon, about what ties his family had, what ties his friends had. But what we do know and what has been confirmed about him is that he was born in Kuwait in 1990, makes him 24 years old. He was a young man. He had Jordanian citizenship and was a naturalized U.S. citizen. And according to a U.S. official, his parents naturalized U.S. citizens as well. He received a degree in electrical engineering from the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga here in 2012. And in addition to his academics, he was interested in wrestling and in mixed martial arts. Yesterday, coaches who worked with him described him as a hardworking young man. They described him as a good guy. A friend said he was an all-American guy, which is very ironic given what he is now involved in and this attack. That he was involved in yesterday that left four Marines dead.
Talking with CNN's Karen Kaifa, who is in Chattanooga today, talking with people about this shooting that took place, four Marines dead. We're getting some of the names now of some of these Marines who were killed, and it's just sort of heartbreaking to see their backgrounds, their stories, of course. The chaplain.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, and of course, it's that walk up the sidewalk that you always hear about with the chaplain and the person and army personnel who has to break that horrible news to the family. And I don't know if you have an age on this latest one, Skip Wells, how old he is?
Yeah, Skip Wells is relatively young. I believe it was friends from his high school that had initially posted on social media and word got out about the loss. Of course, the Marine Corps was waiting to release the names pending the notification of the next of kin. So we're waiting to hear their official release. But
right.
In the meantime, we have had the family members and some friends posting on social media. And I believe his classmate who posted about him said he graduated high school in 2012. So a very young man. And then the other victim that has been identified by family and friends is Thomas Sullivan, Marine Gunnery Sergeant. Thomas Sullivan, 40 years old, of Massachusetts, and his relatives and friends up there have been posting about their loss. So very, very sad stories all around these men, these two men that we know of so far, and then we'll get the names of the two victims. They said hopefully by the end of today that gave their lives after serving their country.
Yeah, all right. Well, thank you very much. CNN's Karen Kaifa in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Thanks so much for coming on with us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So we're talking about the fact that this creep, this murderer, had Muhammad Yosef Abdulaziz, had an AK-47, 30 rounds of ammunition, and the people that he fired at had no way to fire back at them. And they weren't just regular civilians. They were military men, four men in the Marines. One of the, you know, the most recent one, that one we found out about yesterday, 40-year-old Sergeant Thomas Sullivan, he was a gunnery. The guy was a gunnery. So you'd think if anybody had good aim and could have taken this terrorist out, it would have been him. So where do we find, there must be a middle ground where we can arm some of the people on these military bases so they have a way to fight back. You know, the Secret Service, they have loaded guns at the White House. Downstairs, the NYPD has loaded guns ready to go. You have Homeland Security officials. I don't know. The National Guard, are those guys downstairs in Penn Station? I don't know if their guns are ready and loaded to go. But they're carrying these high-powered rifles, machine guns with them as they walk through the city. Yet our military men on these bases, you have Fort Hood, that horrible thing that happened at Fort Hood. You had the Navy Yard shooting down in Washington, D.C., and these people had no way to fight back. 1-800, what is the number for Geraldo? 437-2536. All right, let's see if you could write that down for me, actually. Then I'll memorize it, because I'm not going to memorize it. We'll go to your phone calls. Let's see. Peter is in New York, and Peter, you're on 77 WABC. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I'll be brief. You know, if someone is going to kill themselves, they're going to kill themselves. To disarm the military, especially now, is ludicrous. This is a different age. I mean, we're fighting radical Islam. Let's name it. You know, that's who's going to be attacking the military. These guys got to be armed. It's the army.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. And you have, of course, that ISIS call to go in and kill military members at military installations around the world. And we don't know yet if this guy was taking his call from ISIS. My guess is, in the end, we'll find out that he was. On our newsmaker line is Luke Adler. He was a U.S. Marshal, a Marine himself as well. Good morning. You're on 77 WABC, Luke.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I'm happy to have you on. Tell me a little bit, what was your first thought when you heard about this shooting in Chattanooga?
Here we go again. Another horrific tragedy that, you know, not unlike the Little Rock shooting outside the military recruiting station there back in 2009. And you think, you know, here we have the director of the FBI, James Comey, a guy whom I do not know, but I really like. I like what he says, and I think he gets it. And he's been going around the country talking to Congress, telling everybody, hey, we've got huge, numerous warnings. We've got heightened security alerts. ISIS is specifically targeting our military here in the U.S. And then we find out that DOD has not sent down word that, hey, arm yourselves and be ready. You know, every Marine, when you go through boot camp, you're a basic rifleman. And now they're out in harm's way without rifles.
Yeah, and you know, maybe some of the problem is you go through basic training, and then a lot of times you never pick up a rifle again for a long period of time. So maybe there needs to be some sort of thing where, like the NYPD does, you go to some sort of gun training once a year so you know how to use it well. But then actually you should be able to maybe have one nearby when something like this happens. I mean, it's happening, seems to be, all too frequently. The warning's coming from ISIS. Is there a middle ground that I'm missing here where we don't have to arm everybody, but maybe we should be arming some people at a recruiting station, maybe arming more people on a military base so that we have a chance, we could fight back against a terrorist like this?
Absolutely. I think you're right on the money. I've been a federal law enforcement firearms instructor since 1995. I teach civilians firearm safety, CCW, how to defend themselves. In our military, they receive really excellent training. Marine Corps, again, every Marine is a basic rifleman. So you add to that, like, hey, look, you guys are allowed to go and carry arms under DOD policy, but you have to go and shoot quarterly or every other month so that they can protect themselves. Because we know, as you hear, DOJ is out sounding the alarm that, hey, these guys have evil intentions, and they plan on coming here. We've seen it happen before. We see it happen again, and yet we continue to make mistakes and put our people out there unarmed.
Talking with Luke Adler, former U.S. Marshal, former Marine, has written, by the way, a great book called Chasing Bandits, which you should absolutely check out. What do we do then? Because you know this better than I do. Do we just create bigger barriers outside some of these bases, out some of these recruiting stations? How can we make it work where we don't create another situation where the suicide rate goes back up on these bases, or there's more instances of domestic violence where people have guns and they use them on these bases?
Well, you know, as long as you have humans in the equation, you'll have human frailties and human incidents like that. You have to watch. We have to watch each other and keep an eye out for people that are displaying signs of, poor behavior, as it were. But most citizens can take care of themselves. And this thing, you know, this ideology that, well, we can't put guns out there, even though the bad guys are coming up with guns, the laws only target law-abiding citizens. Bad guys don't care about the law. And these guys didn't have a chance, these young Marines down there at this station didn't have a chance because an arbitrary policy set in place back in the 90s that no one revisited to say, hey, you know what? The alarm's going off, and these bad guys are coming here via the internet or whatever, trying to get these lone wolves to go out and act. That's just, it's counterintuitive to say that, hey, you know what? Our people shouldn't be well-trained and armed. Just set forth the policy that they need to go out there and receive local training so they know what the local laws are and that they need to practice. In order to carry. I did hear that one officer somewhere, I don't know if it was enlisted, an NCO or a senior officer, did have a personal firearm, I assume under a CCW, and exchanged some shots with the bad guy.
Well, thank God for that. I mean, maybe that was one of those bullets that killed this creep. So the book that Luke Adler wrote, you should check it out. It's called Chasing Bandits. And Luke, thanks so much for coming on with us this morning.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Sure. So we have to arm these guys in a better way so they can protect themselves. I mean, when I look at this 40-year-old Sergeant Thomas Sullivan who was murdered, he did two tours of duty in Afghanistan only to come back here and be shot and killed in Chattanooga. I mean, that's obscene. So we're going to take more of your phone calls. The number here again, read it to me in my head because I don't have any idea what it is. 1-888-866-437-2536. Maybe if someone could write it down for me, that would be gay. 1-866-Geraldo. Take more of your calls coming up right here on 77 WABC. Really, I mean, it's insane to think that these guys had never had a chance, yet they're protecting us when they're out in the field. But when they were on their own military base, they couldn't defend themselves. Going to go to your phone calls, 1-866-437-2536. Thank God somebody wrote that down for me, because when you smoke a lot of weed as a kid, your memory is not so good. Alex, you're in Queens, and now you're on 77 WABC. Good morning, Alex.
Hey, how's it going? I just want to comment. I think this is all on Obama's hands. Just like the Obama Bill de Blasio blood on his hands, I think this is on Obama. He has done nothing to fight these people back home, to show these sleeping terror cells here, these lone wolves, how they call themselves, that they're not going to win, that they don't have a chance.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with you on the Obama thing. This goes all the way back to the first Bush administration, then on to the Clinton administration, then into the Obama administration, and nobody changed the policy. So I know that everybody likes to blame President Obama, but Obama can get a little bit of the hit for this, but so can the other presidents who never changed the policy as well. Rick, you're in Richmond Hills, and now you're on 77 WABC. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. From what I understand, in Switzerland, every male head of household is required to possess a working rifle and every year to be instructed again as a refresher in the operation of this rifle that he's
really
required to possess. Okay, and you do know, just from not hearing anything about it, that Russia respects Switzerland. Russia can mess with other countries. Russia does not try to horn in on Switzerland, because every family in Switzerland is armed and trained.
With a rifle or a handgun? What is it, a rifle or a handgun?
From what I understand, a rifle.
Really?
I
did not know that.
I've, Okay, so I'm not pro-gun, but if you have an even playing field where everybody knows that everybody else is armed and trained and authorized and required to operate a rifle, then the situation changes. The mindset is different.
Huh. Well, that explains all the holes in the cheese, I guess. Let's see. Andrew is in New Jersey. And Andrew, now you're on 77 WABC.
Yes. My uncle and father were Marines. My father was actually in the Navy, but he was a corpsman, not a corpsman like Obama pronounced it. So he was put into the Marines as a medic. But I just want to say President Obama needs to fight less against Islamophobia, worry about that less, and worry about Islamic jihad more. Thanks, well, Noam, and you're doing a great job.
Thank you very much, Andrew. I think you can do both at the same time. You can absolutely do both at the same time, and I think he's trying to do that. Whether he's successful at it or not is another question. Old man, you want to go by old man? Okay,
yeah.
Old man, you're on 77 WABC.
No, I've been around a lot. I was.
Well, that's why you're an old man.
I'm going to talk a few minutes this time because I'm not going to just give PowerPoints. I was in the MPs, transferred there into from Special Services Unit as an MP for 3 months at Fort McClellan. And they had a compound there, a stockade. And I was, for some reason, made an MP. They had a shortage, and they trained me very quickly. They gave me a .45 and showed me how to shoot a shotgun with a sawed-off point. And I actually did stockade duty with a shotgun, believe it or not. And I took a prisoner to Leavenworth who had stabbed somebody in the face with a bottle. Now, having said that, I know not much, but at least I'm a person who shouldn't have been carrying a .45 because I wasn't well-trained enough to use it. But I had been given the use enough to pull it out of a holster.
Right.
Now, here's the deal, and when you're creating some bad stuff here. You don't give everybody a gun.
Oh, I didn't say that.
You're talking about our guns.
No, I didn't say that.
The Army has MPs, and MPs are like a police force.
Yeah, but there's no MPs at a recruiting center.
This is what the problem is. Every garrison, mine was the Chemical War Center and the WAC Training Center. It was a garrison. But there's no reason why you couldn't have and employ MPs, military police, on all garrison bases. All right? It's that simple. And they carry 45s, and to pull somebody out, you'd probably, you want to give them a K-47, fine. But that's what you do.
All right, that's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea at all. 1-866-437-2536. I don't necessarily want to arm everybody on a base either, especially if it's been a problem in the past. Jim in New Jersey, you're on 77 WABC.
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, I just want to say my heart goes out to those Marines that were killed. It's senseless. Geraldo estimates that there's 500,000 of these homeland Islamic extremists. I estimate it as at least a million plus. You walk into police headquarters, you know, there's a cop there with a gun.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you walk into a recruiting station. I mean, like you said, these Marines that were killed, some of them were overseas 2-3 times already, and now they're back home here. We know what's going on. We were warned. There has to be somebody armed in one of these recruiting stations.
Yeah, and I agree. And, you know, thank you very much, Jim, for the call. Hopefully somebody's listening. You know, the Donald, who has done very well in the polls, you know, back on July 7th, he said something about this. He said the gun-free zones and military bases was a terrible idea. He said that back on July 7th. I'm not a huge fan, but I think he's right about it. We have to do something because this is awful. We can't let this happen again. More to get to. Don't go anywhere. No, I'm in for Geraldo, 77 WABC. So getting the names of these four Marines that were shot and killed, massacred, really, yesterday in Chattanooga by what looks like a guy who was radicalized, maybe by what he read online. Maybe he, we don't know yet. We don't know all the details. I guess they'll start going through his computer files to see who he was chatting with, what he was talking about. I guess he had two blog posts in the last couple of days that are just sort of strange. I guess you could read into one that sort of suggests that maybe he was planning something. But he had an AK-47, 40 rounds ready to go. He used almost all of them. And shot at these Marines who had no way, Zippo, no way to fight back because they're not armed, because they're on gun-free military installations, whether it was that recruiting center or the military base itself. They had no way to fight back. And so you have this 40-year-old, Thomas Sullivan from Massachusetts, did two tours of duty in Afghanistan, a Purple Heart recipient, and he dies here in Chattanooga. I mean, that's outrageous. And then this other Marine, we don't know exactly how old he is, but he looks like a kid. I mean, he can't be more than 20, 22 years old. Skip Wells, also taken down by this terrorist. And again, no way to fight back at all. Taking your phone calls, 1-866-437-2536. Time maybe to end these gun-free military installation idea, the one that started back in the first Bush administration, and then into the Clinton administration, on to the Obama onto the second Bush, then into the Obama administration. So it goes all the way back. And I know people want to be quick to blame the presidents, but it's the military. It's folks inside the military that make these decisions, and they decided that it was safer to take the guns out of the hands of these military folks who are trained just to use those guns. But there has to be some sort of middle ground, some way that they can protect themselves so they're not sitting ducks the next time this happens. Because you know what? It's happened twice before. There'll be a third time. You have the Navy Yard, of course, in Washington, D.C., being the most recent one. Then, of course, you had Fort Hood. So, and then this one. So we're going to see another one. So we got to figure out a way to defend these guys because they spend their lives defending us. Rick is in Madison. Rick, you're on 77 WABC.
Yeah, hi, Noam. Good job. A couple of comments here. Number one, if you go back and play the tape, you'll see that once again Obama displays his hatred of the military because he refers to the four soldiers as individuals. He cannot in his brain say the word soldier. There's something sick in his head. But
don't you think it's something though? I don't know if I buy into that. I mean, I know people really dislike this president.
I know you voted for him. You're an apologist for Obama.
No, I'm not an apologist for Obama at all. No, I sometimes when I hear him talk, I say, okay, geez, you know, was he really that careful in the language that he chose? And I think in this case, it was just a matter of it was a heartbreaking moment. He was speaking from the heart, and I disagree with you. But go ahead.
Okay, second point. If I'm president, and I hope to God a senator like Ted Cruz, or if Boehner and McConnell could grow a set, should put pressure on Obama, being commander in chief, to do this. If I'm president, I've already signed the order. All military personnel, right down to the chief cook and bottle washer, are armed. And if they're off duty, they have the option to conceal carry in all 50 states. They can travel to and from any state in the country, and on top of that, any retired military person who elects to conceal carry gets a 50-state concealed carry permit, because this country is under attack, Noam, and we want to make sure, we want to send a message that you attack a military facility or recruitment center or an individual Marine walking through Grand Central Station, you're going to get fired upon.
All right, well, Rick, I think it's an interesting idea, but we're armed to the teeth as it is, and we don't really handle that well. If you look at the murder rate across this country, and we're quick to use it in domestic cases, we're quick to use it as a form of revenge, and that's not the case around the world. It was awfully interesting. We took this caller the last hour, and he talked about the fact that every adult, every home in Switzerland, if there's an adult in that home, they have to train and own a gun, know how to use it. And I thought, well, geez, is that story true? So when we were in the break, I checked, and sure enough, he's right. Switzerland issues every adult a gun, trains them how to use it, and it has the lowest gun-related crime rate in the civilized world. It's awfully interesting. I don't know. We can't seem to handle it in the same way here. I mean, we're just firing at one another like nobody's business. Bob, you're on 77 WABC. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Noam. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I just want to set a couple of things clear. First off, when you're talking about the members of the armed forces, they train quite regularly with their weapons, okay? It's not like they just use it in basic training. That's of old, okay? Any of your soldiers, sailor, airmen, and Marines, I know specifically Army and Marines, every year have to requalify with their weapons.
See, now, we got conflicting information from somebody we had on earlier in the morning who was suggesting that they don't train enough, that it doesn't happen yearly. But I'll take you at your word. Go ahead.
Oh, it does happen yearly, okay, and there's a set standard. And those soldiers that are sitting right downstairs in Penn Station from you are highly trained, okay, to assist New York City law enforcement. So it's, you know, young men and women coming into the armed forces today, very intelligent, very trainable.
Are those National Guardsmen that I see downstairs? I've always wondered this. Are those guns locked and loaded? Are they loaded, or would they have to, if there was something going on in Penn Station, would they have to reach for the ammo?
No, they have everything with them. They have specific rules of engagements that they would have to follow, but they assist law enforcement. But, you know, you have to remember that, you know, they're not going to, if they do decide to arm people in the armed forces in recruiting centers and armed forces reserve centers, I don't think you're going to have people necessarily walking around with long guns. They would probably issue them pistols so that they could protect themselves. You know, don't misunderstand what a lot of people are saying to you. Our soldiers, sailor, airmen, and Marines are very well trained and more than capable of handling, you know, firearms in their possession. So, you know, let's establish that as very clear. I do understand it's your open question about Switzerland that, yeah, they are basically a reserve force as an armed force. They don't have a large standing army. And one of the large things that happens within their army is they mobilize it every year to train at different times, and their weapons are held right in their houses. Okay, and that's
But somehow they don't shoot. Somehow they don't shoot at each other. You know, in between those times, we here, and I'm not saying, you know, pointing military in particular, but there is the high suicide rate and high rates of domestic violence within the military. We have this habit of shooting at one another. For some reason, in Switzerland, they have it under control. They don't shoot at one another.
Well, I don't think our statistics are that much higher than the same
I don't know about that.
Than on the outside. I don't think that it is. I think really you'd have to drill down on that and actually take a look at the statistics and the data, okay? I do hear that a lot myself, that, you know, we have a lot of suicides, and I don't disagree. You know, any suicide is bad, and we, you know, the armed forces have been trying to work on this and have been trying many different avenues to bring that down. But we're talking about a different issue. You're talking about a lone wolf walking into a reserve center, which is where some of these Marines were killed, and recruiting stations. Recruiting stations are generally on streets, you know, storefronts. Reserve centers are usually a little bit of a harder target, a building set back somewhat. So they have to look at their force protection conditions and actually, you know, upgrade that somewhat, what they need to do and how to react to these different things. But the only way to stop this, unless you had a police officer like they're doing in New York City right now, actually stationed at these locations, would have to arm some of these service members in those locations.
Yeah, well, I think that's absolutely right. And just a matter of how do you do that and not bring the suicide rate back up within the military. And I think, look, it's the military that's telling the president what to do, giving the advice to the president on suggesting that to keep this ban in place, this gun-free zone ban in place. I mean, maybe it won't now with this most recent shooting. They'll start to readdress the policy. But up till now, it's different military advisors from different political colors who have said to the White House, who've said to the president, no, we want to keep this gun-free zone plan in place because we've had too much bloodshed within the military. So there's got to be a compromise somewhere. Arming everybody, I'm definitely not in favor of that. We're going to take more of your phone calls, 1-866-437-2536. Noam Layden filling in for Geraldo on 77 WABC. Talking about this awful terror attack in Chattanooga. Coming up, just a second from now, we're going to talk with Curtis, who had what I thought was a pretty good editorial in the New York Post. But before we do that, let's take one more phone call. Grandpa, and what is it today? I had some guy called Old Man who called in. Now there's a guy called Grandpa. Yeah, now there's a guy called Grandpa.
They should have MPs at every one of those places.
Oh, you want to get right to business, I see. I wanted to talk about your name, but you just want to talk about that. What about the Grandpa thing? Why do you call yourself Grandpa? Why not just give us your name?
Well, that's what they named me.
Oh, I got you.
But anyway, if you go to, have you ever been to Quantico?
I have, actually. Yeah, I went with Geraldo.
Okay. When you're going in the gate, what do they have? What's there? They have Marines.
Right.
What do they have in their hands? They don't have pistols. They have, you know, what you would call an M16.
Yeah, they got serious hardware.
And there's a guy with a shotgun.
Right.
Okay? That's how you arm. Pistols, forget about pistols. You know, that guy's, he was probably in the Army in 1944.
Give them. I see what you're saying. So give them the sort of same gunfire that might be coming their way. So maybe they should be locked and loaded with AK-47s as well. So more of this. We're going to have more talk about this shooting, I'm sure, as the afternoon wears on. But I want to welcome in my good friend Curtis Liwa, who comes up, of course, in 7 minutes from now with Curtis and Kubi. And I see that you stole my topic from yesterday, where I was talking about how the city was falling apart, and then wrote an editorial. And I actually was reading it. It was almost word for word what I said on the program yesterday.
Oh, I Joe Biden you.
You did.
There's no doubt. I Joe Biden you. And look, he became vice president, and nobody held it against
right,
him.
Right, it worked
he
out for
stole
him.
His words from Neil Kinnock,
right.
The labor leader in England.
He
look
did.
At
I remember
he could
that.
Be running for the presidency. But you're so right. I steal from you every morning,
you
especially.
Do.
I listen to Noam Layden, and all of you must listen to him 5 to 6 right before Imus in the morning, because he has such great stories jump-starting the day. And oftentimes, we don't give you credit. Sometimes we do. And a lot of times, the rest of my crew
right.
couldn't be more disparaging towards you.
Really? What did
yeah.
I say?
Well, you know, like, come on. Well, wait a second. taking some from
I think
the 5
o'clock
I think
just a little
out.
Jealous that you're saying nice things about
exactly.
me.
Exactly. And let me give you an idea of what happened yesterday. Yesterday,
right.
I was impaired. I was on the psycho segment of the Imus show. And I couldn't move my mouth because I had chipped a tooth. So I self-medicated with Vicodin. And I got through that. I got through 3 hours with Kubi. I actually think I may be taking Vicodin every day just to survive Kubi.
Well, Vicodin is a great high.
Then I knocked out 1,000 words in 2 hours, where normally it takes me 8 or more to do an op-ed piece in the New York Post, which you're reading from today, which is partially philandered and purloined from you.
Right.
And let me tell you something. It goes right at Comrade Bill de Blasio, your mayor, who's in denial. He actually thinks there are less homeless people today than there were during the years of Bloomberg and Giuliani. And then the Post does such a masterful job, Cole Allen, the editor, because on the news section, they have him finally going to the Mecca for homeless people, Tompkins Square Park, which I lived across from and Ron lived across
right.
from. So we're going to compare notes. And what did the homeless people tell him? We need housing.
Right.
Then Cuomo is pimp-slapping him, saying, oh, yeah, de Blasio's not doing anything. But notice, I go at him twice. I say, Cuomo, you got all these state-run facilities. Creedmoor, you got Manhattan Psychiatric. 2/3 of the beds are empty. You're not providing any counseling, any care, any intervention for any of the mentally disabled. And you won't even talk to one another. They haven't spoke to one another in months.
Well, that's outrageous. And you see these stats where it's like 1 in 20 New Yorkers have some sort of mental disability, and some of those are the ones who are on the streets.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
Yeah, because you're one
well,
of the
Well, let's face it,
20,
most
yeah.
of us in talk radio,
right.
you just said that half your brain was burnt out as a pothead early on.
It was, yeah.
But for us, we are insane in the brain.
We're medicated. But we are on medications,
yes, right.
carefully
so keeps you in
calibrated
check.
And
right.
whatever, and you know, we're going to talk about this just a few minutes in the Curtis and Kubi show, but I have to tell you,
right.
Curtis has undergone sort of a sea change with his respect to the homeless since he has become homeless himself. In
yes.
fact, I just
I was going to ask him about that.
His freaking underwear off of what I call the Kubi strip, which is the last portion of my office.
Yeah,
our
it's just newspapers everywhere.
There.
Those
yeah.
were clean PVDs.
Right. I mean, it is a lot like Israel. It started out, we're going to share it 50-50,
right.
and now I've got a tiny little desk area called the Kubi strip, but Curtis lives there, and I understand that. And I respect that. I'm not trying to take away his homeland.
I squat.
But what
he's using
Curtis
a MyPillow,
has realized, and yeah. it's an amazing thing, is if you read his op-ed piece today, and I really encourage people to do it, instead of the attitude that was prevalent to a generation ago, which is the homeless are sort of dangerous garbage that must be swept off the street and put in prison, Curtis is calling for intervention programs,
yeah.
outreach,
look at that.
Housing, treatment, using money to
that
take care of
really
because
working,
I realize
man.
I'm one step away.
I know, and that's what's so
hey,
my homeboys in Penn
State. You got a show coming up. Let me say goodbye.
I mean, you're still pretty, and you're getting better around the issue of gays and lesbians as well because you're a step
George
away
Carlin,
from that.
I was just riding away.